Good evening, Zimbabwe. It's 17 hours 20 UTC, 7:20 p.m. in Zimbabwe, on Sunday, March 15th, 2015. You're listening to Studio 7 Live from the Voice of America in Washington. For joining us this Sunday evening, live from Washington, I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye. Amongst our top stories this evening, the chairman of the Center of Resources and Development has castigated government's plans to merge all diamond mining companies into one big firm in which the state would own half the shares.
The biggest challenge we are having is we have politicians and people in government who are purporting to be representing the people when in actual fact they are using people to siphon the resources through policies that are skewed.
Zimbabwe's massive investment in education after independence has failed to translate into voter participation in elections, according to Harvard University research fellow.
We find, contrary to what, you know, in standard ways we think of as the positive effect, we find in Zimbabwe it seemed to negatively affect participation.
Soccer fans are calling on ZIFA to put its house in order as Zimbabwe football family tries to come to terms with FIFA's decision to throw the Warriors out of the African qualifying competition for the 2018 World Cup in Russia.
If government fires them, FIFA will also extend the visa for that. So I think they have to do the honorable thing, resign and mark.
And as usual, we have the Youth Forum with Tatenda Gumbo. The chairman of the Center of Resources and Development has castigated government's plans to merge all diamond mining companies into one big firm in which the state would own half the shares, saying it will not benefit local communities where the mines were operating. Mines Minister Walter Chidakwa told a committee of parliament Thursday that all mines would be merged, including Rio Tinto's Morowa diamond mine in south central Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe last year earned US$396 million from diamond sales, down from US$456 million the previous year, according to central bank data. The chairman of the Center of Resources and Development, James Mufumi, speaks to Studio 7's Junga Kandemiri on the issue.
Money that has been lost through smuggling, where diamonds were sold and funds were not remitted to government. For them to simply now say that we are now partnering all the companies without those companies being investigated, without government accounting for what has been lost, without government stopping all these companies and investigating what has been happening and accounting the wealth that has been lost and the wealth that still remains. It's almost impossible for government to now say they will partner the same company. We have a situation where people are at Kimbada in Harare every day, workers who are failing to get their salaries. We have not been paying for several months. And now for government to say now they are simply partnering all those companies without investigating them, when the current companies are failing, it is almost impossible.
But do you see if this merger goes ahead, communities benefiting from this one company the government is proposing?
Communities may benefit if the laws are changed. Right now, we've got a very controversial indigenization law, which somehow purports to have been implemented in the interest of the communities, when in actual fact, these laws were actually a way of managing a small clique of politically connected individuals to benefit and exploit the resource vis-a-vis the communities who are supposed to be the beneficiary. In most cases, other than Marange, where these CSOTs are working, we have seen members of those CSOTs appearing before parliament and saying that when money was deposited in the CSOT, some senior politicians caused them to say, don't touch that money until we arrive and hold a meeting with you to see how we disperse those funds. So the biggest challenge we are having is we have politicians and people in government who are purporting to be representing the people when in actual fact they are using people to siphon the resources through policies that are skewed in the interest of their pockets, not the community.
That was the chairman of the Center of Resources and Development, James Mufumi, speaking to Studio 7's Junga Kandemiri from Mutare. This is Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington. We're going out to you on the 4930, 4940 and 15455 shortwave frequencies and on the 909 medium wave or AM frequency. Zimbabwe's massive investment in education after independence in 1980 has been widely applauded for producing a highly educated populace in Africa. But that has failed to translate into voter participation in elections, according to the preliminary findings of research by a Harvard University research fellow. Speaking recently at Johns Hopkins NEET's School of Advanced International Studies here in Washington, D.C., Kevin Crook, a research fellow in the Department of Global Health and Population at Harvard University, said, though it is normally expected that education in developing nations would increase voter participation in electoral processes, in the case of Zimbabwe, which he described as an authoritarian state, there has been marked decrease in voter participation. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke with Crook to explain his findings.
Zimbabwean education reform of 1980 really created almost a kind of natural experiment in policy. And so what we try to do is to kind of leverage the differences across age cohorts to understand the causal effect of getting educated, mostly secondary education, but we talk about education more generally on your political behavior. And we find, contrary to what, you know, in standard ways we think of as the positive effect, we find in Zimbabwe it seemed to negatively affect participation.
And why is that? Can you talk about some of the points?
People are benefiting. They're more interested in politics. They know more about politics. So it's not somehow that they get nothing out of education or they're uninterested in politics, but even though they're more interested in politics, they're less likely to participate. So we think of this as a kind of deliberate disengagement from the political system because they're enabled and kind of empowered to think critically about politics.
Mm-hmm. You spoke about how President Mugabe himself is very educated. He was a teacher, and when he came in, he led this reform. So can you talk about if that determines anything? Because wouldn't it be a case where the citizen would want to say, okay, well, the leading party is pushing education, I should then kind of support them, you know, when it comes down to voting?
Complicated question, but I think one thing that's interesting is that this age cohort of people who benefited from the 1980 reform, these are the ones that benefited the most from independence in some ways, benefited from ZANU-PF's education policies. So you might think that they would be most likely to support the regimes. What's really interesting is that despite, you know, benefiting from this education policy, education seems to have had other effects which make them less likely to support the regime and to participate.
And the opposition, which of course sprouts up as time goes on, how did that play with this educated group? Did it make any factor to the way that they were presenting themselves in terms of voting and also how they were viewing the political structure in Zimbabwe?
So given the data sources that we use, we have limited ability. You know, we can't, you know, get inside people's heads as they're voting. So we just have to kind of look at patterns of behavior and kind of draw conclusions about what we think, you know, opposition supporters were doing. But it does seem like education, you know, increases disillusionment with the current regime, and, you know, we think that naturally explains why they would be more likely to support the opposition. It's definitely the case that you know, the educated cohorts are better off economically, but also more unsatisfied, at least with the political situation.
Also looking at how things change socially and politically after the 2000s, if you were to move forward with the data, would that have any change in the view of, you know, what you're seeing?
Yeah, I mean, I think one encouraging thing that we see in the data is that, you know, even though education seems to have this negative effect, when elections get very competitive, as in 2008, that negative effect goes away. And so it's not some kind of fixed rule that educated people in these settings will never participate, but only when they think that their participation is meaningless. When it seems like their participation, you know, can affect the distribution of power, especially executive power, they seem like they join the political fight again.
Kevin Crook is a research fellow in the Department of Global Health and Population at Harvard University in Massachusetts. He spoke to Tatenda Gumbo here in Washington, D.C. You're listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington. Visit the Studio 7 website to read our top stories, listen to our programs, and subscribe to newsletters in English, Shona and Ndebele. Our website is at www.studio7news.com. Coming up, the Youth Forum with Tatenda Gumbo.
You are now listening to the Youth Forum, your forum focusing on your issues. Today, I'm gladly joined by Stephen Sibanda, who is the youth president with the Mawambo Kusile Dawn Party, but also a member of Occupy Africa Unity Square in Zimbabwe. Stephen, thank you very much for joining me.
It's my pleasure, Kevin.
Stephen, the events of this week have brought open questions about what your movement, Occupy Africa Unity Square, is about. Tell me about the Occupy movement and what it means to you as a young person in Zimbabwe.
To me, the abduction is actually an intimidation, or it's actually meant to throw fear to the youth of Zimbabwe. To me, as far as I'm concerned, and the response to from the general public, actually, they are not victims at all. They are determined to go. This has actually strengthened their courage to carry on with the struggle. As far as I'm concerned, this has raised so much tension on the political circles.
What are some of the demands that those, particularly in the Occupy Africa Unity Square movement, are asking for?
Actually, we have been negotiating, we've been meeting as Occupy Africa Unity Square, trying to find a way, trying to find the solution to these questions, to these things which are, to this barbaric act, actually. There are some things that I cannot reveal to the media right now, but we have found a solution. We are still trying, we are still working on to find some other means of finding the leader of Occupy Africa Unity Square.
There's the issue of young people who are saying that they don't want to be politically affiliated, but they do want to see opportunities open for them in Zimbabwe. What's your message to them when it comes to what you are doing on a daily basis?
Politics is played from different angles and different stages. You may be a politician behind the scenes. We appreciate that. But let us, we have the courage to face the evil. We have the courage to face the situation. Join the forefront. As long as you join us somewhere, somehow, but I know we're all together in Zimbabwe. And my message to them is that you don't have to fear. You know, this is just the beginning. This is being made right now. This is the beginning of the youth. So we have to be together. We have to face the evil. We have the courage, comrades.
There are some other youth who would say that things in Zimbabwe are okay and that there's no need for this kind of action, in particular calling for President Robert Mugabe to step down. What are your sentiments on that issue?
Remember, opinions are free. It's not a crime to vote for President Robert Mugabe. It's not a crime to oppose him also. You know, we respect their views, we respect their opinions. But the truth is that things in Zimbabwe are not real. The train has long went off the rails. So to pretend these things are okay, it's just a thing.
Can you talk about some of the key issues that you would like to see fixed in Zimbabwe?
All I want to see is a better Zimbabwe. I would be happy if youth are represented in parliament. If there's seats that are reserved for youth and women, I mean, I would be happy if the president of Zimbabwe, whoever will be the president, will reserve some ministerial posts for youth, because youth are the future of this nation. You can't give this red message as the ministers. Taking a look at the Honorable Dokora, you know, he's actually there to destroy the future of the next generation. How can you introduce condoms at school? How can you introduce cell phones at school? You know, it's IT, but the way he's introducing these things is very bad. If there was a youth there, they could negotiate, they could table the youth together, they could, introduce IT in a better way. So I would be happy if I receive some youth being represented in every political aspect, actually.
And moving forward, is there any room for dialogue, Stephen? Are you open as youth to speak to, obviously, those that are representing you in order to find a way to deal and alleviate some of these issues?
My brother, my colleague, my friend in the struggle, it is always advocating for a dialogue, actually. But as far as things are changing right now, I don't see any room for dialogue. We are dealing with a hard man who is regarding that. So we are trying by all means possible, but we don't want violence. We don't want violence. We try by all means to have a peace dialogue, you know. We are trying hard, we are pushing hard. Also, you know what, Zimbabwe is in this state not because of the violence of dead people, but because of the silence of us, the good people. So if the silence of good people says yes, we have to go to the other side.
Stephen, I do want to thank you very much for joining me today on the Youth Forum.
Thank you very much, Stephen.
That was Stephen Sibanda, youth president of the Mawambo Kusile Dawn Party and also a member of the Occupy Africa Unity Square movement, joining me today on the Youth Forum. This is Tatenda Gumbo, and make sure you join me next Sunday.
This is Studio 7 for Zimbabwe, coming to you live from the Voice of America in Washington. And in sports news, soccer fans are calling on Zifa to put his house in order as Zimbabwean football family tries to come to terms with FIFA's decision last Thursday to throw the Warriors out of the Africa qualifying competition for 2018 World Cup in Russia. This follows the decision by the International Football Controlling Body to throw the Warriors out of the 2018 World Cup following failure by Zimbabwe Football Association to own a debt owed to former national coach Brazilian Valinhos. First, Zifa were given 30 days to settle the debt, which was extended to 2 months. But even after the 3 months extension, the local football association failed to honor the debt, leaving FIFA with no choice but to throw them out of the cup. Warriors fan Temba Nzounenda tells us more.
It's very disturbing from the fact that we lose out on a chance to showcase our talent. Our players lose out on a chance to be viewed on a global scale, be comparable to the other global stars. But I think the most important aspect that we must look at is the issue of lack of proper corporate governance within our football managing body, FIFA. And I think this has been a cry from as far back as we can remember. FIFA has mismanaged the sport to the level that we cannot pay the coaches that we hire to the extent that we are suspended from the showcase. I think it's really sad. Something must be done. I think the onus is on this executive to step down voluntarily, because otherwise if government fires them, FIFA will also suspend FIFA for that. So I think they have to do the honorable thing, resign en masse.
So from your observation as a soccer fan, what would you advise, especially the administrators, to do? I know you're calling for their resignation, but what other methods can they do? What's your own advice as a soccer fan for Zifa?
My own advice is, if they are there to manage the game of soccer, they have to manage it as a business, and they have to make money out of soccer so that what can be sponsored from that management. I think the other most important aspect, I want to borrow from a comment that was made by Lars Mobamba some few years back. At the time, you look at the script and exercise. When you keep changing, we might keep call for the changing of exercise, but if the script also is not changed, then an actor is said in a script that they will die at a certain stage. They will eventually die whether you change the actor or not. So I think apart from just changing the actors, you also need to change the script. We are talking about the whole system of governance. The way we govern our sport has to change. We have to manage it along business lines so that it can sustain itself.
That was Warriors fan Temba Nzounenda in Harare. Now to recap on today's top stories. The chairman of the Center of Resources and Development has castigated government's plans to merge all diamond mining companies into one big firm in which the state would own half of the shares. And soccer fans are calling on Zifa to put his house in order as Zimbabwe's football family tries to come to terms with FIFA's decision to throw the Warriors out of the African qualifying competition for the 2018 World Cup in Russia. That's the news in English from Studio 7 this Sunday evening, March 15th, 2015. Stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Standakile Mhlanga. This is Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye in Washington, wishing you a pleasant evening, a very good night, and a great week ahead.